We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at wyxr.org.
7 FM.
We're hanging out. You're here on Talking Memphis. It's Jared J.B. Boyd. We're going to be hanging tonight with the one and only James Alexander. Just hang back and we'll be here with you in a moment to tell some stories, listen to some music, and learn and laugh and love on each other here on Talking Memphis.
Girl, it's something about your act, and I sure do like your style. Maybe it's the way that you carry yourself, or maybe it's the way that you wear your hair.
Hey, yeah.
If you're a funketeer, you're in the right place. Here at WYXR 91.7 FM, we're awaiting the arrival of the King, James Alexander, bassist of the Bar K's, founding member of the Bar K's, and we're celebrating tonight the premiere of Soulsville, USA on HBO. Check it out if you haven't checked it out. If you weren't at the premiere the other night, it's a star-studded affair. A lot of stories, a lot of amazing music, and an incredible legacy coming at you. We're going to give James a little bit to get up in here. We're going to dance and party until he's here on WYXR 91.7 FM here in Memphis, the station that's raised by sound. WYXR 91.7 FM in Memphis, Tennessee. The man is in the building. I told him we just played three different eras of the Bar K's just to set the tone, because we want to get to We only have a little time together, but I want to be able to cover quite a lot of ground.
Okay. Let's do it.
Everybody that's listening from wherever you are around the world, you are tuned into what I think is the best station in Memphis, Tennessee, and this whole surrounding area, and maybe, you know, for miles and miles and miles around. But whether or not that's, you know, your side of the debate, what isn't up for debate is that we have a pioneering funketeer sitting on the other side of the studio from me here, and I'm so extremely humbled by the fact that we have such a great rapport, and I truly appreciate that you always give me such great time and such great access. So I'm gonna let you know, if you're listening wherever you are, no matter where you are, whether you're near or far, you can hit us up at WYXR.org, or you can call us 901-460-3031. That's 901-460-3031. Leave me a message. Leave the man, James Alexander, a message. James, how you feeling?
I'm feeling great, but I'm going to feel better. You got to make a commitment to me before we get started.
What's up?
We got to finish that book this year.
We
got
to finish the book this year. All right, so you here to hear first?
Yeah.
You know, I've been keeping it close to the vest.
Right, though. Well, we got to... We're going to still keep it close to the vest, but we got to finish it, dude.
That's right. Well, I, you know, listen, if you're listening.
In 2024.
That means I'm on a deadline. That means I'm on a timeline. We got just a little over 6 months to make sure we handle this business and get this book done.
We got to get busy.
All right. So I'll be telling James's story. So some of the stories you hear tonight, we'll see them in print, and they'll be shipped across the world. And you got my word on that. How about that?
How about that?
All right. We'll shake on it right now. We'll shake on it right now.
Shake on it right now. Hey, can y'all see? Y'all can see it through the microphone, right? Yeah.
Well, I'm blessed by that opportunity as well. So we're listening to some brand new Barcaze. But before that, we heard You Can't Sit Down, of course, from the debut record that the Barcaze
Soul
did.
Finger.
Soul Finger.
Yeah.
You know, for those who maybe haven't followed the group that far back, to the debut on Volt Records, to your time at the studio at Stax and on tour with Otis Redding. I mean, can you just let people know about the Barcaze and their beginnings and leading up to that moment?
Man, you know, well, you know, we had some humble beginnings. Actually, we began in junior high school, you know, to formulate the Barcaze. And believe it or not, I was the last person to come into the original Barcaze. I was the guy that couldn't play. Mm. I owned a bass guitar and a bass amp, mm-hmm. but I couldn't play.
Yeah.
So what happened is it all started when I was in junior high school. I wanted to be a drummer. Mm-hmm. I went to the band room, and the band director said, oh, you know, stand up, state your name, your age, your date of birth, you know, the whole nine. And he said, well, what do you want to do? What do you want to play? I said, I want to play the drums. He said, well, I'm sorry, there's no need for any more drummers. But if you want to be in the band, we do have an opening for tuba players.
Hmm.
I said, oh my God. Because, you know the tuba is. It's a big, heavy metal instrument,
right?
You know, because back then they didn't have, you know, now they have fiberglass tubas. You know, you've probably seen them, like a lot of white fiberglass tubas. But now, you know, back then they were metal tubas, and those things were heavy. So in fact, I took the pillow that I sleep on every night, and put that pillow on my shoulder as a pad for my tuba.
Mm.
But anyway, the Barcaze were already a group. They wasn't called the Barcaze at that time. The bass player in the Barcaze, in the group at the time, was a good bass player, but he didn't own a bass.
Mm-hmm.
So I would take my bass, I would ride my bike, put the bass, you know, because it had a handle in it, put the bass in the handlebars and ride to their rehearsal every Saturday. So I rode every Saturday, take my bass out, let them set up and let them, you know, rehearse. So this one particular Saturday, I came to their rehearsal. Their bass player didn't show up. And so they said, hey, we were ready to start rehearsal. Who's going to play bass? They said, you. I said, but there's one problem. And they said, what's the problem?
I can't play.
Right.
So They said the guitar player, who at that time was Jimmy King, he said, "Okay, I'll just I'll show you enough to get through rehearsal." Mm-hmm. And so that's what he did. So we got through the rehearsal. I got on my bike and rode back and went back home. So the next Saturday came up. Here I go with my bike again over to their rehearsal. So this particular Saturday, the bass player showed up this Saturday. I took the bass out and, tuned it up, get ready to give it to him so they could start rehearsal. And so the guys in the group said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm getting the bass ready so y'all can start rehearsal. Y'all bass players here, I'm going to give it to him so y'all can start rehearsal." Why are you giving the bass to him?
You got the job.
Yeah. I said, "Because y'all got to start rehearsal." They said, "Well, guess what?" I said, "What?" "He's not the bass player anymore." "Well, who's the bass player?" They said, "You." I said, "But y'all forgot this one small problem. I can't play."
Right.
I said, "We'll teach you enough to get through the rehearsal." And that's how it all started with the bar case. I was amazing. The last guy to come in.
Well, that's just the testament to showing up and being in the right place and being ready.
I wasn't ready. I was in the right place.
You had the right spirit about it.
I had the right spirit. Yeah, go. But I have to tell you, I was a hot mess.
In what sense?
I couldn't play.
Yeah, well.
I couldn't play the bass.
So the name of Barcaze hadn't come to y'all yet, right?
No. I had a big, even though I was the, the youngest member and the last member and all of that, had a big thing to do with the name, naming of the group.
Mm-hmm.
We had this really, I guess, dream of aspirations for owning our own ranch. Mm-hmm. And we said if we had a ranch, we was going to call it the Barcaze Ranch. We also had this, I don't know what you would call it. We liked the idea of Bacardi rum because we were drinking Bacardi rum back then. We were supposed to be, but we were. Rum and Coke, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, we took the bar and the K, and here we are, the Barcaze.
And you had a nickname as well. We just heard your theme song, Knucklehead.
Now I know you want to know where that come from, right?
Well, we can save it for the book, man. We got a lot of stories to tell. You're a man of many stories.
Okay. All right.
Hold on to
it. We can say it. I mean, I don't know. They might remember. "Oh, man, you didn't tell the story that way." We're going to change it up, right?
Okay. So, Knucklehead.
Isaac Hayes gave me that name.
All right.
And the reason that he gave me that name is, and this might not be so good, but, back in the days, they didn't have technology like they have now to record.
Mm-hmm.
If you mess up, you have to start all over again.
Right.
Now, if you mess up, they can just say, "Oh, keep going, and we will come back and fix it later," through technology, computers, or whatever.
Yeah.
But I used to mess up all the time, right?
I mess, that's what you said.
Yeah, and Isaac said, "Oh, knucklehead." And so that name just stuck.
Yeah.
And so Duck was Duck, I was Knuck.
Yeah.
And we both don't give up.
There you go. Well, speaking of Duck, I don't want to speak out of school here, but sort of like a baby version of Booker T and the MGs, at least at that time. Is that fair to say?
The Barcaze?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, not even a baby version, because what happened is, if you remember correctly, was it about a little over a year ago, Booker T was in town.
Yeah.
And the Triplets played with him.
Right.
So the MGs were mostly studio musicians, so they didn't really want to go on the road. Mm-hmm. Booker was in college,
mm-hmm.
And he liked to go on the road. They didn't, so he said, "You know what? I'm gonna take the Barcaze out with me."
Mm-hmm.
So he took our rhythm section out. We went on. While I was at Stax, I didn't get to be a marquee, mm-hmm. but I've been part of the Isaac Hayes movement. Mm-hmm. I've been with Isaac Hayes and the Doodads.
Yeah.
I've been an MG
mm-hmm.
and the Barcades.
Well, your signature song of that early era is Soul Finger. You want to hear a little bit of Soul Finger?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. Listen to WYXR 91.7 FM. We're celebrating Soulsville, USA, premiering tonight on HBO. Depending on where you are, it's 8 p.m. Central here in Memphis, Tennessee. It's the home of Stacks, so, I mean, we'll just go with Central Time. Here's a little bit of Knuckle. Excuse me. Soul Finger with James Alexander here in the studio.
That ain't Soul Finger.
This is.
That's it.
Let's go. A taste of classic Barcade Soul Finger there. It still sounds amazing.
Man, that was a long time ago.
Was it 1967?
Yeah.
All right. I'm doing all right. I'd pass that test.
Okay.
You know, we didn't talk about how y'all even ended up at Stax Records or at Volt Records and Stax Family.
Well, actually, you know, and this is for all you youngsters is out there that, you know, be sending in, you know, tapes, MP3 and tapes to record companies and so forth. Back in those days, you had to audition live.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a band, you know, you came in and played. So, you know, we were playing at a club underage. We played at a club. Down on Beale Street, 500 Beale Street,
mm-hmm.
Especially every Friday and Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And Norman West, who was the leader of the Soul Children,
mm-hmm.
Used to come down and sing all the time. And so this one particular night, well, he sung this song every night, a song by J.J. Jackson called But It's All Right.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know how I feel, you never know, you can hurt me. But it's all right.
Mm-hmm.
He used to sing that song every night. So at a certain part of the song, we used to do a little vamp, right? And break down. Every night we did the same, we did the same identical thing. We broke down every night. And we looked around at each other. And we said, what is that? We 17, 16, 17, and 18 years old. So we don't know what the hell we doing. We just doing something. So we went to the studio to audition. And we auditioned for Steve Cropper. Steve Cropper was the over A&R at Stax Records at that time. So we thought we were, you know, we really thought we were hot. Mm-hmm. Steve Cropper thought we were not.
Okay.
So we auditioned, but he did say, he said, look, guys, y'all did okay, but y'all can come back, you know, y'all can come back another time. We're going to let you come back again.
Yeah.
So we came back again. We say, well, you know, because we thought we were ready to go the first time. He said, y'all can come back again. We went back again, and he kind of like gave us the cold shoulder. So as we were leaving the second time, Jim Stewart saw us, and he said, who are y'all? I mean, you know, I saw y'all was up here last Sunday. Y'all up here this Sunday. So who are y'all? We say, it's a little group, you know, like that. He said, I tell you what, I saw what happened. Will y'all come back up here again the next Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
And this time, you know, I want y'all to come up here. You know, the studio will be closed on Sunday. Won't nobody be up here but me and y'all. And I want to listen to y'all play. So we did. We came on up to the studio the next Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And we hooked up our instruments and we started playing. He said, play a little something for me. And we went to this little groove that at that point, unbeknownst to us, it had become a little infectious.
Okay.
So we started playing this little groove, and Jim Stewart said, what is that? And we said, we don't know. I don't know what this is. And he ran up in the control room, and he didn't even have a talkback button, you know, to give us a signal to say, rolling or nothing.
Right.
Ben Carley came up with this little nursery rhyme horn thing. Dun, 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 dun.
Mm-hmm.
30 minutes later, we had Soul Finger.
So kind of similar to how Behave Yourself and Green Onions were cut.
Yeah.
Not to keep going back to Booker T and the MGs, but...
hey, there's something to go back to.
Yeah, but, you know, to also make the point that the Barquets were integrated, which a lot of people may not realize. The original Barquets had, you know, people understand a lot of times that y'all all went to Booker T. Washington, which if you know anything about Memphis and you know anything about segregation, that would lead you to believe that all the members were
black.
However, that's not the case.
It's not the case.
Because?
Well, we had a white guy in the group that played the keyboards and, well, the organ. He played the organ at that particular time. His name was Ronnie Caldwell.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Central High School.
Mm-hmm.
And
which at that time would have been a white school.
All white.
Yeah.
Correct. Now, imagine him going and talking to his parents, talking to them about transferring from Central High School to Booker T. Washington High School, mm-hmm. BTW.
Mm-hmm.
They had a freaking fit.
Yeah.
But he ended up transferring to Booker Washington. And believe it or not, he was the only white guy in the whole school.
Mm-hmm.
He graduated in 67.
Mm-hmm.
And in a class of 500 and some odd kids graduated. And he didn't have any incident, no problems. In fact, you know, Booker Washington is located right near, at that time, the Foot Homes and the Claiborne Homes.
Mm-hmm.
Right across the street from the Foot Homes. He could walk down the street. He could walk down Lauderdale. He could walk down all those streets. No incidents. In fact, he had a black girlfriend. No incidents.
Yeah.
Walking down the street. Hey, Ronnie, what's going on, man? Hey, man. You know, like that. Nothing. No racial slurs. Nothing.
Right. Well, if I could make one more comparison to Green Onions.
Okay.
Soul Finger being one of those songs that every band, high school band, and the same with Green Onions, you know, you play it in marching band. I mean, how does it feel to have one of those ubiquitous numbers that people might, they know the tune, they may not even know where it came from or who's the artist behind it or that it even has a name? It's almost like you're born knowing it. Same with Green Onions.
That feels great.
Yeah.
Well,
and I just saw video of who was playing it. Was it Rod Stewart playing it? So it's still being brought.
Rod Stewart. Yeah, yeah. In fact, Rod Stewart opens his show before he walks out on stage. The band's playing Soul Finger.
Yeah.
I'm still in awe about that. You know, I'm humbled by that. And I think it's great. Mm-hmm. And out of our 300 plus song catalog, believe it or not, Soulfink is still the number one song in over 300 plus catalog, and that song has stood the test of time.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've been listening to all eras of Barkays, and we're kind of going in a chronological order as we listen in the background of this conversation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, we're now into the second phase of the group. We're listening to selections from Gotta Groove. And I don't want to speed past the untimely passing of the majority of the members of the group so quickly. Just because, you know, I think that that's a very somber subject, and I think that it's a very detailed and critical subject that I think people maybe should go and look into on their own. And for the sake of this particular conversation, and the sake of the fact that there's a four-part series, episodic docu-series that'll be on HBO, that people can really go into the Stacks and the Soulsville story, I think that people should take the proper amount of time for that to settle into their lives. And if they have or they haven't heard about it, I want to make sure that I give people the opportunity to approach that in the way that feels appropriate.
Right.
But we'll state matter of factly that it did happen, and you are the sole surviving member of the original Barkays group. Ben Cawley as well survived under different circumstances. He was on the plane that claimed the life of all of your former groupmates and
Otis Redding.
And Otis Redding. Well, I paused because I said former. They are your eternal groupmates.
Right.
And so I want to, man, if I may, just be silent for a moment to commemorate that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Upon receiving that news and laying your friends to rest, you decided that you would start the group back up, you and Ben together.
Right.
Tell me about that decision and the decision to move forward with a vocalist this time.
Well, you know, right after the accident, Jim Stewart and Al Bell came to me they came to myself and Ben Cawley, and they asked us, what did we want to do about the group? Did we want to continue? Just what did we want to do? And something resonated in my mind that the original guys in the group had talked about. We've talked about this, and I don't even know how the subject came up. I can't even remember. But we always said that if something happened to any of us, or one of us, two, or whatever, whoever is left, if there's anybody left, to please carry on. Mm-hmm. Little did I know at the time that I would be the one that would end up carrying it on. Mm-hmm. It started out with me and Ben, but Ben was so traumatized, you know, from the plane crash. He mm-hmm. just was not, I mean, he was just not the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, because mind you, this is a guy that saw several of his members perish right before his very eyes. I mean, he was in the lake. He was the only person on the plane that couldn't swim. And he survived. Mm-hmm. And to see people hollering for help, and he couldn't do anything. Actually, he, on top of him not being able to swim, he was in a state of shock. And it's just miraculous that he survived it all. Yeah. And but it was something.
Well, you know, if there's anything that I could find interesting or particularly odd about the second phase of the group is that you found another white organ player also named Ron.
Ronnie, how about that?
there's absolutely no humor in that situation, but that is the one very, I think, coincidental thing about it.
Oh yeah,
did that dawn on you at the time that you restart the group and you of the only sole member on the revitalized version of the Barkays, white guy named Ron once again?
Man, I didn't really
same instrument.
I didn't even think about it. We just know when we started the audition process, we know that somehow we wanted to have another white guy. We didn't know what instrument that he would end up playing, but it was just ironic that he happened to also play the organ as well.
Well, we just heard a little bit of Got a Groove, which, you know, we already mentioned there was a vocalist in the band at that point. So Larry Dodson, who many people associate with the group, begins in that period. How was it incorporating vocals into the Barquet sound?
Well, Larry didn't come along until 1970.
Okay.
And
is that not him on the cover of that record?
On Got a Groove?
Yeah.
No.
That's not him?
Okay. No, he's not. He didn't. Larry made his debut with the Barquets with Black Rock.
Understood.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he came into the group, and FYI, for those of you people who don't know, Larry came from the Temprees.
Right.
A group that he formed. Mm-hmm. It was actually his group. And the funny story about that is that when I went to a club in Memphis called The Showcase, to just check out the Temprees, and with my ulterior motive being to, I went there to set up a meeting with him so I could talk to him, you know, and see if he would be interested in auditioning for the Barquets. So when I got there, I waited till they had a break, you know, because, you know, when you play nightclubs, you know, you get a break at night. So what happened is I saw him on the break, and I said, man, I want to talk to you about possibly auditioning for the Barquets. And he said to me, hey, man, you can talk to me now. I said, no, I don't really want to. You got a show going on, and, you know, we can get together tomorrow. And he just kept on insisting. He said, no, you can talk to me now, man. You know, I got a show. But, you know, I said, nah, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Then, he just kept on being so persistent about it. I said, I'm interested in auditioning you for the Barquets. He said, I'm in. I said, dude, it don't work like that. Yeah. I said, we got to audition you and all of that. And once we auditioned him, and he went and told the group that he was leaving them, a group that he formed to join the Barquets, they jumped on him for betraying them, you know?
Well, I won't touch on the jumping on. But we appreciate Larry Dodson for all of his incredible work and leadership in both of those groups. Tell me about the man we're listening to right now. How is it working with Isaac Hayes? I mean, he emerged from a songwriter and from calling you knucklehead in the sessions.
You're right.
To probably at the top of the rhythm and blues soul world as a vocalist.
How did that evolve?
Band leader. Well, tell me about your time with him and what it was like playing with him, because I don't quite know the delineation between his work with the Barquets and then forming the movement and going on and going forth.
Well, the work with Isaac Hayes came way before the movement of Isaac Hayes recording becoming a solo artist or recording and all of that. I was in one of Isaac's bands called Isaac Hayes and the Doodads.
That's right.
So we used to play at a club over in West Memphis called the Plantation Inn.
Mm-hmm.
We played over there 6 nights a week, from 9 to 3. The only night that we were off was Sunday night. We played Monday through Saturday, 6 nights a week. And we did that for almost a year. We played from 9 to 3. And, you know, we've had a lot of different incidents during that time. We was playing from 9 to 3. We was playing one night, and we was playing, and all of a sudden, the drummer was playing. Then all of a sudden, there was no drums. So the drums had fell. I mean, he had gone to sleep, and he fell backward off the drum set. And we still was playing the song, but the drums were gone.
Well,
it just hit you, right?
Yeah, I know. That's right. That's
just
right.
Fine.
Well, you know, there's so many stories that we could get into, and I want to make sure that maybe we should just do this again. I mean, we're doing the book, but we should maybe do this again, too.
Yeah, go ahead.
But, you know, I wanted to jump eras a little bit because, matter of fact, how about we do it as far as a song? How about we talk about maybe, all right, let's talk about this.
Okay.
We got coming up here at WYXR a celebration of your record, Do You See What I See? The Barqués, what was it, 1970, I want to say two? Was it two? Two
somewhere right? Around in there, yeah.
And the sound's changing. I mean, it's funky.
Oh, okay.
I mean, of course.
How do you record all of this?
There's soul. Yeah, it's all happening right now.
Right.
It's soul, it's funk, it's rock and roll, it's psychedelic. There's a lot going on. And not just particularly on this record, because I want people to know that this is June 12th. We'll be celebrating this record right here upstairs in the Memphis Listening Lab. State of the art. You'll be with us.
That's coming up pretty soon. Huh?
Yeah, people can RSVP if they'd like to RSVP to be with us. You'll be there. I'll be there. We'll be playing the record. We'll be talking through the record. I mean, what do you attribute to the change in the sound? Because y'all are considered very much well-earned pioneers of what we know to be funk.
Well, I mean, you know, the sound changed a lot, especially when we added the vocals. You know, the sound changed tremendously, to be quite honest with you, when we brought Larry Dodson in.
Yeah. And after this period of time, I mean, Stax closes in 1975, and I can only imagine, you know, what was going on in your mind and what was that period like for you?
Man, we was devastated because, I mean, you know, I guess we had grown, I don't want to say like to be dependent on Stax, but you know, we were kind of like the little, I don't know, nephews or whatever, mm-hmm. but they would let us, I mean, we would come in, you know, most of your major sessions, you know, with all the major artists, the Johnny Taylors, the Carla Thomases, the Rufus Thomases, the Staple Singers, most of those recording sessions were done in the daytime. You know, none of those people, you know, they didn't want to record at night. Isaac was one of the few people that didn't record in the daytime. He only recorded at night.
Mm.
And so we ended up, you know, the studio would be available that night. So we would go like in the studio sometime at like 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock at night. And just be there all night.
Yeah.
Trying to come up with something.
This is my favorite part of this song right here.
Okay.
You hear this breakbeat a lot. DJ Africa Islam from the Universal Zulu Nation. He made this breakbeat pretty popular in the hip-hop era right here.
Right.
I like that. Now you on that bass, dude.
Yeah, you see.
Yeah. I think Ice Cube has a joint rapping over there. If not Ice Cube, Ice-T. Maybe both of them.
Right.
That's crazy. I like that a lot. Well, so Stax closes, and y'all move on to Mercury Records. And y'all are doing work at Mercury, and some kind of way Stax creeps back out with this record. A reformed, revitalized version of Stax, and this tape was found. And so now y'all have two albums and a separate set of singles hitting the radio, hitting the charts at the same time. You have a record on Mercury and a record on Stax, a revised version of Stax. Fantasy had purchased and for a brief period of time revitalized Stax.
Right.
And this record becomes a hit along with what other single? Was it Shine?
Shine, yes.
Mm-hmm. What's it like having two LPs, two singles, hits out on two different labels at the same time, maybe even two different lineups of the band at this time?
Right.
I mean, this was the old tape, and of course, Henderson Thigpen and some others co-wrote this song. Was that awkward?
No, it was wonderful. Yeah, it might have been awkward to some, but it was wonderful to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it just made us just a tad bit hotter. I mean, we were hot. I mean, you know, that was, I mean, not that we don't work a lot now. I mean, we were working a lot.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, For those people listening, you know, this past weekend, you know, we did the slam, the smoke slam. Mm-hmm. With War. Mm-hmm. That was pretty interesting.
Y'all get together a lot over the years, right?
Yeah, we've done a lot of stuff over the years. And next weekend, we'll be in Tuscaloosa playing with Kool and the Gang.
I'm ready to ride out, man. I'm waiting on my ticket, man. I'm ready to roll with y'all, man. Y'all need a roadie?
Midnight Star.
Okay, see, that's my other favorite group.
Kool and the Gang, Midnight Star, Lakeside, and the Bar Case.
Can you sneak me in a flight case or something? I'm trying to go.
Yeah.
All right.
Come on down, baby. Let's go. ain't nothing but a hop, skip, and a jump down.
I already know. I got some people out in Tuscaloosa. What up, T-Town? What up all over the world? If you listen to us on WYXR 91.7 FM, I'm hanging out with James Alexander. It's Talkin' Memphis. My name is Jared J.B. Boyd. And Soulsville, USA is going to premiere tonight. Depending on where you are, the timing might be a little different. Here in Memphis, it'll be 8 p.m. Central, episode 1 and episode 2. Fantastic. I saw the first episode the other night. You were on stage at Smoke Slam. I was hanging here watching the film. I DJed the after party. I made sure to play some of your records.
How about that?
But how do you feel about this incredible series coming out where people can hear not only the story of the beginning, but really the fallout in the end and really ruminate on the implications of these stories? I mean, some of it may be controversial, some of it may be heartwarming. You're definitely going to dance, you may cry. I haven't seen the whole thing. How do you feel about it?
I feel that it's been a long time coming. I feel that the world needs to know, you know, from some of the people that still exist today, your Al Bells, your David Porters, your Deanie Parkers, your James Alexanders, they need to know from the horse's mouth, per se, what really went on at Stax Records. Very important.
Yeah. Well, with all due respect to our friends at Stax Records, at Kraft and Concord, who set up this evening for us tonight, I want to talk a bit about that Mercury period, just because it's important to the Barkay story, but also it's another chapter in the aftermath of the fallout of Stax that, you know, the Barkays as a band sort of spearheaded Barkays an organization, a number of self-contained funk bands from this area, you know, who may have been directly involved with y'all, may have competed into some regard, or may have benefited from the production of Alan A. Jones and some of the other members. Can you tell me about what it was like having that group here, having your group here, having Mercury? They had an office here locally, is that right?
Yeah, they had an office. Their office was located inside of Arden Recording Studio.
And, you know, there are groups like Quick, Ebony Webb,
Confunction,
and even outside of Memphis, here's a little group, was it Chocolate Milk?
Chocolate Milk.
I mean, how did all of these, you know, Memphis sort of almost like a funk capital, a little funk capital onto itself with the Barkays right in the center of the universe. What was it like leading that pack? Tell me more about Alan A. Jones and his leadership and also your own. You know, you did some production as well outside of the Barkays, you know, the main camp.
Yeah. Alan Jones, actually, we met Alan Jones. He had just got out of the Army. He was in the Army. Mm-hmm. And he's a musician himself. He was a bass player. And actually, we met him at, he was playing at a club, at Club Handy, you know, down on Bill. And then later, the owner of Club Handy ended up buying a, which converted, well, it was a bowling alley. Mm. And turned it into a club, which everybody, if you live in Memphis, called Club Paradise.
Yeah.
And that's, but I, you know, I met Alan during that particular time. Cause I don't know, some kind of way, you know, he was an aspiring writer. So Sunbeam gave him an office inside of, cause Sunbeam had some, you know, like rooming houses.
Yeah, Sunbeam Mitchell.
Yeah, he had some rooming houses.
Call it the Mitchell Hotel, quote unquote.
Yeah, and then he had some, you know, like, you know, these like these rooming houses, like, you know, musicians would come through Memphis, they, you know,
right.
A lot of them end up staying here, you know
right
what I mean?
For a little while, yeah.
But he wanted to work with the Barkays. He started out wanting to work with the original Barkays.
Mm-hmm.
But to be quite honest with you, the original Barcase wasn't interested in him working with us. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think it's safe to say, I didn't know it then, but you know, looking back on it, Jared, I think we probably kind of had the big head a little bit.
Understood.
Yeah, you know, we just, you know, we thought we were just high and mighty. You know what I mean? We thought we were. I mean, we were real good, and we thought. And let me put it another way: we probably had a lot of confidence in ourselves.
Right.
How about that?
Right.
Yeah.
Can you appreciate now, looking back and seeing how much talent was around y'all or influenced by y'all in this region? And it's not just what happens in the studio. I mean, you had a career in promotions. There's splinters off of the Barcays organization as far as production in studio, but also, I mean, stage shows. Who's bringing out snakes and you know, who knows what other kind of wild freak shows y'all had going on that I can't talk about on the radio. I wasn't there, so yeah, I'm just going to use my imagination.
No, we got some kind of, I don't want to say PG, but we got some kind of stories that we can talk about.
Yeah.
I'll tell you just one little brief one.
Yeah, because we almost out of time. We're going to do it as part two.
Okay. Yeah. You heard of Don Shula, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, his son had a club in Fort Lauderdale called Shula's, and it was right by the Fort Lauderdale airport. So his son hires us to play this club. The first night that I think we were supposed to play three or four nights. It was a whole weekend, like a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Well, Friday night, I think we had 20 people. We had 20 people at the show Friday night. And Jared, you know about nightclubs. I think we were playing for the door. So 20 people weren't gonna make it.
Right.
We're gonna make it happen. So we said, look, man, we got to be here two more nights. We got to figure out something, because if we playing for the door and we only had 20 people, we don't even have enough money to get back home. So what happened is, now this is gonna freak you out. We came up with this idea. Man, we got to get some people at this club. So you know what we did?
What was that?
We streaked.
All right. Well, there must have been something to see then. That means y'all had something to show.
We streaked.
You didn't run everybody up out the club with it.
No. After we streaked, a couple of people in, you know, we went with 20 people in there, a couple of people in the, out of that 20 streak too.
Okay.
But what happened was, those 20 people that were there, I mean, this is how I know for sure that word of mouth works. They start spreading the word, man, we went to this club last night and the band streaked. And a couple of people in the audience streaked. So the next night, which was Saturday night and Sunday night, we had lines around the block.
Wow.
To get into the club.
Yeah.
So the Saturday night we streaked again. Then about maybe 15 or 20 people in the audience streaked too.
They came ready.
They came ready.
They came ready. They moisturized and everything before they got there.
Yeah, oil themselves down. Yeah, you know, baby oils.
Well, this right here is Private Property, produced by Alan A. Jones on Carl Carlton, who you might know for She's a Bad Mama Jamma. This is another little branch off the Barcays tree,
right,
that I enjoy.
Let me hear that. I forgot about that song.
I thought you might have forgotten about it. Yeah, it's kind of got a similar vibe to She's a Bad Mama Jamma, but it's in that style, but yeah. it's got a little bit more of a different sheen on it. Yeah. Well, you know, if I can talk about that next era, you are someone who I think deserves credit for handing the keys to the hip-hop generation, so to speak. And I want to be sure within this last, we just got 4 minutes left, that I give you your credit for that. Not only because of what you did with your promotions work and helping sort of guiding some artists behind the scenes, I think of Kid Money, SMK, and your own offspring, Jazzy Faye, Phelan Alexander, of course, named after your departed groupmate, Phelan Jones.
Who's my best friend.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Right. Who I think, I wanna leave this conversation on this note just because in many iterations, we've seen the Stax family give way to what I think is maybe Memphis's premier musical export right in this moment, which is hip hop.
Right.
And you were way ahead of the curve on that, but also offered your own child into that legacy and in that story, and who has been, I would say, one of the most productive producers in hip-hop history, particularly in Southern hip-hop history. So I commend him for that as well, because without him, there may not be people like a Sierra, like a Young Jeezy, like a T.I., and others.
Ludacris
and
Mary J. Blige,
Jody Breeze and several other artists,
right?
And just an incredible level of musicianship in the works that he's done,
right?
And as a vocalist as well, and probably so many records that haven't come out from Jazzy that would blow things wide open, because I know, you know, he had a solo record at one point that could have come out on Capitol, I believe it was.
No, he was on Elektra.
Elektra, but, and then he had the duo record with CeeLo that was on Capitol.
That's right,
Atlantic Elektra.
Right.
Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Either way.
Happy Hour.
Happy Hour, but there was the We Riding 12-inch that had a, I think, song called South Side on the back. Something like that. Either way, one of my favorite artists as well. And as I mentioned, several other iterations.
And what about Teela?
Teela, amazing, yeah. Show enough. Yeah, well, what I think about Gangsta Pat and Willie Hall and Isaac Hayes III and Isaac Hayes, of course. And I mean, this is something that has occurred and reoccurred, and you had a direct hand in making sure that passing of the torch happened. And one of my favorite songs of the Barqués is Grown Folks, which also features Jazzy. So I want to end with a little bit of that, and I want to thank you for being with us here tonight.
And let's go, and let's sometimes, hey, man, you got me all worked up now. Let's do part two at some point.
Let's do it again, as the Stable Singer said. Hey, you can come back tomorrow. Be on Nervous Wreck Radio with me.
We'll come back. I can't come back tomorrow, but I will come back.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being here with me, and we'll see. We're gonna watch that documentary tonight, and then we'll talk a bit about it later. How about that?
Okay.
Cool.
All right.
Give me a chance. See, I ain't gonna treat you like a mother.